I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're traveling back through the eras with Lisa Kudrow in Time Bandits on Apple TV+, pestering the police in the Good Wife spin-off Elspeth on Sky Witness, and Guns Don't Kill People, ITV does, because that sound of the police is Piglets, which landed there on Sunday. But that's not all, because Freddie Fox joins us on the show this week to talk dodging dragons in House of the Dragon. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters. I am joined today, bodily this week, which is nice, by my two co-pilots, Kay Ribeiro and Boyd Hilton. And although by the time this podcast goes out, it'll be a week late, I have to say, I watched the football.
Oh my God.
All of it.
What?
From the beginning right the way through to the end.
Wait, you went back to the very first match?
No, I didn't. Obviously, Kay, because I needed the full story arc, and you know I don't like to join up.
I know what you like.
Yeah,
you can't just join halfway through.
100%.
Were you strapped down and tied up and kept held kidnap or something?
Well,
by Chris Hewitt or someone?
One of my neighbours invited me over to watch the game.
Wow.
Okay,
and so
first of all,
I got full ambience.
Two things that we need to flag there, right?
Yeah, this is brilliant.
First of all, football and social engagement.
Yeah.
Wow.
Were there a gaggle of neighbours? Was it like a little gathering of neighbours?
There was a whole bunch of people. His whole family was there. It was the whole thing. And I sat on the sofa and asked questions about why they were kicking the ball and things like that, like basic things. Although, you know, I have to say, that second goal was definitely offside.
Well, it wasn't, tragically.
Well, you say that, but my eyes say different.
It looked it.
They
have automated now technology that proves it without any discussion, which they're bringing into the English league next year. And unfortunately, it was offside. It was
by the narrowest narrow margins.
That's
though.
Literally
but
a
the point
toe
of it-
is now they can scientifically pinpoint the toe when it is offside, as they did in that game. So, which channel did you watch it on? I've got so many questions.
BBC, Sky, ITV? I think it was Sky. Wasn't
no,
it or something?
No, it
wasn't Sky.
I don't know.
He put it on.
Gary Lineker hosting it, Ian Wright?
I don't know.
Ian Wright?
I know who Gary Lineker is, and I don't recall him.
Oh, okay. So it was from the other side.
So it would have been
hosted
the other one.
By my friend Mark Pugach, starring with Ian Wright.
Why not?
On it. And did you enjoy it?
You know what? I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I was not, I mean, bearing in mind, like, it's a good hour and a half. I was not bored.
What's interesting is the first half was genuinely terrible. It was kind of like in footballing standards.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you manage to enjoy that, which was quite a boring game of football, you should really see some of the
because there wasn't
games.
A lot of like sort of like there weren't a lot of close calls, were there? It wasn't there were a lot of like loads of shots in the area.
There were literally
it was just
no shots on goal.
No plot twists.
Yeah, it was just titting about in the midfield.
Yeah. but
there was minor tension. But it's when you know when you get when it's a goal up, you know, oh, now it's tense. Now there's tension because now the clock is ticking, right?
Yeah.
And then they evened out, and now I'm going to take some of it away. And then every time it gets near the area, you get a little bit stressed out. And weirdly, I thought my general insouciance about it, because obviously I was wanting England to win, but I wasn't hugely invested. But I thought that was the perfect way to watch it, because it meant that I wasn't super, super stressed out, because the people I was watching with were very shouty and very stressed by it all.
Yeah,
and I was only mildly I was stressed, but only mildly. So I thought that was the way to do
incredible.
It.
Incredible. You got embroiled in the whole thing.
So yeah, I did quite enjoy it. Obviously,
this is
didn't love the result.
But start of a regular thing. Who do they support? Do you know, like club-wise? Do they have a club?
Oh, I've no idea.
No, okay.
I've no idea.
But they could get you around to watch their
league
steady.
Games. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. No, I don't think so. But yeah, so that is what I've been watching. The football. Who'd have thought?
Same. Yeah.
I started off watching ITV, and then I went over to BBC.
Why?
Well,
I mean, obviously, but why?
Well, the truth of it is, I texted Boyd to say, which channel should I watch it? Yeah. And he was very remiss and didn't reply for about, what, half an hour?
Wow.
So I took to Twitter and our loyal listeners got in touch and said, yeah, BBC.
Really?
I mean, they're
wrong. Absolutely wrong.
It's just because your mate was on ITV.
Yeah, ITV, much, much better. Much, much better panel. Roy Keane, Ian Wright, Gary Neville. I mean, seriously, regardless of my bias, and I am biased, it was so much better than the BBC this time. And in fact, the figures show that ITV's share, audience share was up massively. I think by a third on the last equivalent. Yeah. People are really, you know, and traditionally in these kind of things, people do turn to the BBC when they're both showing an event.
Yeah.
But I think ITV is doing really well with its pundits and its team. And the my award for best pundit, of course, goes, well, it would go to Ian Wright. I love Ian Wright, but Roy Keane is just so entertaining.
Brilliant.
And the two of them together, they do a podcast together with Gary Neville, and they're fantastic together. We should get them on the podcast.
Now that James is a signed up fan.
Now that I'm apparently a football fan.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So that was exciting. Do you know, but I was quite disappointed. Do you know why? Because I watched it. I was very excited to talk to the builders the next morning.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And the builders didn't all arrive at the same time. And one of them came in. And I went, I watched the game last night. And no word of a lie, I went, yeah, I don't really like football. So it was all for nothing.
You sorted up for the test that didn't happen.
I know. I was so thrown. I didn't think to follow up and say, "Did you watch House of the Dragon instead?" Like, I, you know, but didn't even go there.
My Eastern European plumber / handyman Sylvester. He's very interested in football, so we have lots of good football discussions. Yeah, just saying.
You two are very, your chat recently, social-wise, has been very maintenance, plumber, builder-based.
Well, we've both got
issues.
Plumbing issues, apparently.
Issues with
Mine still hasn't been fixed yet, by the way.
Oh, really?
Anyway,
okay.
Bordy's plumbing.
Back on Monday.
Terrible.
Back on Monday.
He's still leaking.
Right. What else are people watching that isn't football?
Well,
I know what you're going to say.
Go on.
I know what you're going to say, because you're going to say exactly the same thing I did.
Don't say
which
it.
Is, yeah, and Kay's going to be furious with both of us, Boydie, so you might need to step away from her a little bit. This is the lesser known of the Kevin Williamson films. I know what you did last weekend, and it was watch all of Slow Horses.
Yeah. I mean, I can't
because
deny it.
Slow Horses, just listeners, just to get this, we said it might drop early, and there was a text exchange which just began on Friday with Slow Horses, all in caps, because it turned up on the screening site.
Yeah. And it took a while because we were told, I mean, this is so boring for the list, sorry, but we were told by the actual publicist for the show.
And it wasn't there.
And it wasn't there. They were like, I panicked. Like, I think I've got an alternate account anyway. I think I've
you
got
freaked
two
out.
Screeners again. I know, I did. I was the one who pointed out that often, I was the one who pointed out
no, you're
often
right.
a delay.
Because you're so
Thank
interchangeable.
You.
It was actually James.
It was me.
Unbelievable.
James Slow horses,
and
then, not fast horses.
And then there it was, yes. And what a thing of...
And it's in manga, so we cannot tell you that it was absolutely fantastic. And one of the great shows on television.
And unlike Presumed Innocent, we had the full six parts.
Yes.
Not. And I mean, that's the other thing. Presumed Innocent finale will arrive any day
the
now.
Presumed Innocent finale, which is still not on the screening site, even though it airs like in a couple of days.
No, I don't think it will be.
I don't think it will either.
Well, listen, Cry Us a River.
By the way, I think indicates they're going to change the ending. But anyway.
Do you think?
Well, also, there's a second season, as we're getting through news. They've greenlit a second season, which makes me wonder how they can wrap this up in a final episode if they're going to do another season. But who knows?
Yeah. So, yeah,
I think the good thing about the Slow Horses watch now is because you guys will be forced to watch it again to refresh your memory, so we can do spoiler each week, spoiler special.
It's not until September.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's only, because they'll show the first two anyway to start with, and then there's only four after that, so it's fine.
And
it's
Kay, you're just not going to watch them until September, right?
No, I will watch. I was really super busy, and I thought, actually, do you know what? I'm not racing to compete with those two to watch it, because we can't talk about it anyway. So, and I didn't want to like just gallop through it. I want to enjoy it. So,
yeah, very good. Slow Horses, galloping.
Very good.
Look, it wasn't by coincidence. It was
equestrian references. I mean, we had a lot of horse chat last week, but very different horse chat. I will not break any embargoes, but I had a lovely weekend.
Yeah, same.
Watching the football.
You're absolutely right. That was that. And then I also went to a screening this morning of talking of things that embargoed, Sherwood Series 2, which is written by James Graham. And I've interviewed him for the podcast, which will go out when the series arrives.
Yes.
I think in August sometime. And also embargoed, so I can't talk about it really. But all I would say is I chatted to James Graham, the other thing that he wrote recently, or in fact, the thing he's working on right now is Dear England, which is the TV drama version of the play he wrote about the England football team and Gareth Southgate's
role.
Which
I'm now an expert in.
Now find much more accessible and easy to get to grips with. But it was fascinating. You'll hear the full interview on this very podcast, but he was talking about how, you know, he was waiting on the reality of the finale of would, you know, if we won the thing, if he won the Euros, that would have been his climax to the show. If we didn't, that's another climax show. As it turned out, we didn't. But handily for him, Gareth Southgate resigned 2 days later. So he could have been waiting until, like, you know, Christmas, because Gareth Southgate's contract took him until Christmas. So poor James Graham was like...
He was never going to wait till Christmas.
No, but he was very relieved. He was genuinely relieved that Gareth Southgate had made the decision, at least. And he is... The whole thing, you'll see it, the whole play, and now the whole drama that will be coming up. He's writing it now, so it'll be a long time away. It's all about the extraordinary achievements that he had, changing the culture of the England football.
So he's a fan?
Huge fan. Yeah, he's like, he feels completely like connected to him. He's only met him a handful of times, but feels totally connected to him. So there's that. Then I stumbled upon this show, a program that we could and probably should have reviewed. It's in that category, right? This started last weekend on normal television, BBC One Saturday night. BBC One Saturday night. Both ITV and BBC in the summer have gone a bit off-piste. You know, Piglets that we're reviewing later is on ITV Saturday night, 9:30 after the Alan Carr comedy. It's quite completely unheard of for ITV to be showing half-hour comedies on Saturday night. Well, the BBC is now showing foreign dramas on Saturday night, and High Country is the new one on BBC One prime time, and it's an Australian mystery crime drama series created by Marsha Gardner and John Ridley, and it stars Lea Purcell as a detective, Andrea Whitford. She's investigating disappearances of people in a small town in the Victoria area. Broken Ridge is the town, and it is literally called the Victorian High Country. And you know that cliche where they say, which is one of my least favourite cliches of the reviewers use, and sometimes creators and actors use.
It's definitely going to be something I say. So.
Banana crackers.
The landscape. They say either the landscape or the city or the whatever is like a character in the show. That is a horrendous cliche that I can't stand. Well, but in this case, it really is. the backdrop, honestly, the backdrop of the High Country in Victoria, Australia, is extraordinary. The stunning,
is it
lushness.
Cinematic?
It's massively cinematic. It looks incredible. And the show, the main, so if you're watching it on a big TV or like mine, like I was watching it on mine, the main thing
had to get that in there.
I was literally
watching on a big TV like mine.
Yeah, I was literally flipping around. I think I was probably waiting for football to start or something. I don't know. And I was like, oh my God, this looks incredible. And I was caught up by that, by literally how it looked.
How many apps?
I think there are six in all, and it moves to BBC Two when the Olympics start, because everything that's normally on BBC One moves to BBC Two when the Olympics start, like EastEnders, your favourite, and this show and others. But so it's on Saturday nights. It's all on iPlayer as well if you're not watching it, obviously.
Do you know what? You know I love an Aussie drama.
Yeah, I could. And the bigger picture is that Australia's fucking taken over, because there's so much Australian stuff. There's comedy. We touched upon this a little bit on Plus this week, didn't we? There's comedies, but this crime drama I thought was really good. I'm
going to write it down.
Write it down. Okay. Eight episodes. I tell a lie. Eight episodes. So that's what I've been watching. What about you, Kay?
I have been watching. Okay. So I said I was going to carry on watching Land of Women, Apple TV Plus, with Eva Longoria.
Yeah, misguidedly.
You two scoffed at me.
Yeah.
And I have continued.
On account of it being rubbish.
Yeah. It is enjoyable. It's ludicrous in places, of course. I think. I just really like the characters, and I'm into it, but it's got a really light and frothy tone, as you know. Hmm. But it also covers quite serious issues like dementia and transgender issues. So sometimes it feels a bit, you know, off kilter with that. Yeah, and also just the tone
preachy.
Of it doesn't. No, not preachy. It's just
dull.
Like. No.
Banal.
You're banal. It's because it's like it's light and frothy the way it handles it. I'm like. I'm not sure if, like, it handles it very well. Like, I don't know if you can just, I don't know.
You
if
mean,
it feels...
are the topics too heavy for such a light and frothy
That's exactly
tone.
What I'm saying. Very inarticulate.
No, okay,
all
right. Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
So the
I think probably the answer is yes.
Thanks for confirming. The other thing I've finished now is Douglas is Cancelled.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you said...
Hmm? It went very high pitched. Oh, yeah.
Karen Gillan gave an exceptional performance. Like, so good. Now, my new motto is, what would Madeline do? Okay, guys, prepare yourself, because that is going to be...
What a brilliant last two episodes, though, because it completely...
Oh,
Rug pull, spectacular.
Totally. Yeah. You're going to get complaints for saying that. Okay, then what else are we watching? I have watched Simone Biles Rising. That's the new documentary on Netflix. Looks at the fact, you know, she pulled out of the Tokyo Olympics 2020 and why that was.
James has no idea who she is.
Okay. Oh, sorry. I should say, she's one of the greatest gymnasts and athletes that ever lived. And she pulled out the 2020 Tokyo Olympics because she had these mental blocks. And it was sort of connected to the twisties. It's a term used for gymnasts when they get so disorientated in the air that it's actually really dangerous because there's no guarantee they'll land on their feet. Obviously, there's no guarantees anyway, but usually those who try these really technical, hard twists in the air are confident and like have got a good spatial awareness. But sometimes if they get too much in their head, it can all go to shit, basically, and they get this thing called twisties. Anyway, it examines like why those mental blocks occurred, and it's connected to the sexual abuse she suffered at the hands of USA gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar, is it? There was a whole kind of court case, massive, highly publicized court case about that because there were a lot of victims. Anyway, so she sort of like touched upon that and the fact that it had this effect on her, and she had to pull out the Olympics, which was massive because, you know, she's like a highly decorated Olympian and, you know, everyone thought she would just scoop loads of golds again. Anyway, she had to pull out, and this sort of like charts how she dealt with all of that and how she has come back and she's going to Paris and for one last hurrah. So, I mean, anyone who's interested in that, I would recommend, because she is a fantastic athlete and it was well made. I got put off my... because James looks like he's just glazed over.
No, I was listening intently.
He is a bit glazed, right?
Wrapped attention.
Enraptured.
Okay, yeah, fine. That's right.
I would recommend people watch it.
What channel is it on, Kai? I don't think you said
Netflix.
That.
I did say. I said it's a new Netflix documentary.
Boydie was one who glazed over and wasn't listening.
Yeah, I know.
I apologise.
And then the final thing, which I won't go into because we might, don't know if we'll review it next week, Totally Completely Fine on ITVX.
We almost certainly will review next week. Yeah.
Well, all I'll say, it's a dark Aussie comedy and I watched that.
Yeah, fair enough. That's all you can say. No spoilers.
Mm.
It stars Thingy from Last Night in Soho, Thomasin McKenzie.
Oh, okay.
It's quite.
You can't say anything if I can't.
Well, I said it's quite a big deal because James is looking askance as in, why are we reviewing this thing I've never heard of? I'm just giving him the background.
It was more of a, this isn't on the calendar.
I actually did a session of putting stuff on the calendar.
Yeah, I know you did. To be fair, you actually did. Because I went to put some stuff in on Monday. I was like, oh, it's already in there. How did that happen? I was like, surely not. Boydie's been in there.
It's on the calendar.
It's on the calendar.
It's there.
Oh, it's gospel. It's there. No. It's canon.
Take
it's in
that.
There.
James is standing corrected.
Fair enough.
Mind you, Tom Jones is on there, which actually isn't on. That's been removed by
it. Unbelievable.
Controversially.
Defacing the calendar.
Yeah.
What else has been on? Obviously, House of the Dragon has been on there, and we are now doing our Here Be Dragon spoiler specials on Pilot Plus. If you want to hear us bang on about that, do subscribe to Pilot Plus now for $2.99 a month and get this very podcast 12 hours early and ad-free as well. God, what a bargain.
But seriously, it's good not to have the ads.
It is. It's
amazing. We should say that because obviously it's great for us to have ads.
Well, ads are great as well for those.
Ads are, are fantastic and we'll take what we can get. Yeah, but from a listening experience, what I'd say is
look, if you are listening to this and you're an advertiser, we love adverts.
Oh,
please
love
give them to us.
Yeah.
Pay us all the money and we will play them for our listeners. If you are a listener, ads are terrible. You don't want to hear them. They're awful. Subscribe to Pilot Plus and you won't have to. There you go.
It's difficult, isn't it? It's just like a
double-edged sword.
Solomon's.
All I would say, it's not like we've got loads of people banging down the door to give us ads. So, I mean, I don't think we need to worry too much about it.
That's true.
Yeah, we get advertising. Don't we? We do.
Don't we?
I don't listen to the budget because I can't listen to myself, obviously. But
I have to listen to you a lot.
I know. It would be really weird if of an afternoon you thought, yeah, I'm just going to listen to
some
podcast.
Some people do listen back to all that. I mean, there are mad people out there. I do not do that, no. But I'm sure there's advertising. Anyway, let's not get bogged down in this whole
And the other thing that happened is the Acolyte finish. The final episode of the Acolyte played, and hey, look, if you're splashing the cash around, want to subscribe to the Empire Spoiler Special podcast for $3.49 a month, and you can hear our episode by episode breakdown of that show for what it's worth. yes, the final
you're
episode.
Really selling it.
Yeah, I am. Look, I didn't love it. It was fine. It was okay. I didn't hate it. I would say the final episode was, let's say, consistent with the overall tone and quality of the show. It was okay. It had its good points, had a great fight, and it had its bad points in that it was also incoherent. But But look, we may get another season of that. And actually, it leaves the show in an interesting place to go for season two. So there's some good stuff to come. And apparently, well, I say apparently, I've heard conflicting things about whether or not it's had good ratings or bad ratings. I've heard, oh, it's done brilliantly. But then it's like, that's an internal Disney thing. And then I've heard elsewhere it's not done well. So I don't know. So will we get a second season? Who knows?
Obviously, Disney are going to say it's done well, aren't they?
They are, yes.
They're going to say, oh, God, this is like, you know, bin fire territory.
A little bit, yeah. But, you know, we'll see. I'd quite like a second season at this point because, like I say, I think it ends in an interesting place.
So you're engaged enough to want to watch more?
Yeah. It's not that I didn't like it. I did like it. I was a little disappointed by it because I wanted it to be transcendent.
A little disappointed.
A little disappointed.
A little disappointed. Did anyone like it? Did anyone like embrace it fully?
Yeah, Ben, obviously. Ben, yeah, obsessed with it, thinks it's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
But, okay. You know, he likes Rise of Skywalker, so what does he know?
Yeah, controversial.
Yeah. Right, that is what we've been watching. We turn now to Kay, because it's time for the listener question. And I very much enjoy this section. The reason why I enjoy this section so much is every time I say it's time for the postbag, Kay gets this rabbit in the headlights expression, which leads you to believe she's never heard of the postbag before, let alone found a question.
I tell you why. It's because it's so synonymous with Pilot Plus, right? So then I'm just always like, oh, shit, have I prepared?
Clearly anyway. Not. Is the answer?
Excuse me, I have, right? So this question comes from, the Lone Gamesman. Greetings from Down Under. There was a recent question about overseas shows about politics, and I can heartily recommend The Hollow Men and Utopia, both by the same production company, Working Dog, both very good comedy dramas. So someone mentioned Hollow Men on Pilot Plus, actually, yep. So that's a second endorsement of it.
What is this Utopia? This is not the UK Utopia, no. Or indeed the American remake of the UK Utopia, and presumably this is not an Australian remake of the UK Utopia.
It might be.
Boyd, it's a number crunch. Can you look into it, please? Yeah. Anyway, he continues and says, just watched an episode of Colin from Accounts and saw our high street standing in for somewhere else. Do any of the team get a little thrill seeing where they live or grew up pop up on the screen?
Yes. A paedophile lived in my road in Touching Evil with Robson Green.
God.
I know that because there was a police raid on his house in the show and it was where I lived.
He loves being provocative.
Yeah. So it's like, so some dodgy, I think it was a serial killer as well. The whole gamut. And and Robson Green came and arrested him on my road.
That's quite exciting.
War in the Blood was actually quite, it was quite kind of dark and scary and horror.
Well, this was Touching Evil.
Oh, Touching Evil,
this was
sorry.
Touching Evil. But they're very similar shows.
War in the Blood was as well.
Yeah.
Which also starred Robson Green. And they may have filmed in your street as well. Who knows? Let me just say that Utopia is internationally titled Dreamland. It's not an Australian version of the British/American original. It's a comedy series following the working lives of a team in the fictional National Building Authority, a newly created government organisation. So it's more political satire, as is the what's the other one called?
Hollow Men.
Yeah, they're both. Like comedy, political comedies.
Yeah,
there you go. But yeah, neither seem to have made their way over to the UK on any service that I can find.
Do you know who you really reminded me of just then?
No, I don't, Kay. Tom Cruise. let me think. Glenn Powell.
You're not gonna guess it.
No, I don't know who.
Susie Dent, right in Dictionary Corner on Countdown. They actually look stuff up.
Oh,
and she's very, like, you know, knowledgeable.
Well, I think you're fine.
She's a genius. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I don't mind
that.
Yeah.
No, that's
you came across
compliment.
As a genius.
Mm. So what about you, Boydo? Have you had a thrill seeing where either you grew up or you live now being on screen?
Where I live now, I think I've mentioned this before. They did film a couple of things in where I live, which is in Bermondsey/ Elephant and Castle/Southwark/ etc. I think I've never actually found this out totally, if it's totally true, but I very much think that they filmed the first episode of The Trip, which is Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon, brilliant, the original one, when Rob Brydon are talking about on the phone together, talking about whether to go on this trip. I think Steve Coogan is standing on a balcony in my block, I think. But I've never confirmed that because it looks so much like it. But they did film a whole thing once. I can't even remember what series they filmed where we had like proper lights, you know, massive lights outside in the dark, and they're filming it, some drama, but I can't remember what that drama was. I didn't even know. It might not have even come out yet. It might still be to come. But that's all I know, I'm afraid.
Hmm.
What about you?
No, I just don't have an answer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No,
there are loads, but where we used to work in Camden,
yes.
There were loads of things
like Eternals.
Eternals, the film. There was also Trying, set in Camden, remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Still is set in. And there was that terrible Idris Elba comedy, Netflix comedy, that had loads of stuff. Turn Up Charlie.
Oh, remember? Yes, I remember that one. It's the DJ one.
It's the DJ one. And oh my God, it was diabolical.
Boy, did not a fan.
Created by Idris with Gary Reich, interestingly enough.
Listen, according to James, we know that Idris listens.
Yeah.
He's going to come for
Idris, big fan of this podcast. Oh God, yeah. That's it. He's after you, boy.
Do you know what? I think Idris would, on reflection, not look back too fondly on
this particular... Mate, I wouldn't be the one to say it to his face.
I would be prepared. I guarantee you, he would admit in his quiet time, this was not a career peak.
Okay, fine.
This is coming from Emmy nominee Idris Elba.
Right, exactly.
As we're about to get onto.
Yeah, this was definitely... I love him. He's brilliant and everything.
Okay, can we have an agreement that the next time you see him, that'll be the thing you say to him?
Okay, definitely. Yeah. And maybe we should all... Maybe we could all watch it to remind ourselves. This could be a new feature.
That's awful. No, we can't just re-watch stuff to slag it. That's not kind.
Well, but it could be like their worst or something. You know, someone good's worst thing they've ever done. I think it's quite interesting.
Hang on. You're proposing a segment where we watch terrible TV shows.
Or we just roast stuff.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like the best.
Well, you might not think it's terrible. You might like it. I don't know.
That's probably true.
I mean, he thinks everything's terrible.
2019. Were we doing the podcast then?
Yes, we started in 2018.
I think we did review it. Yeah.
We did review it. Yeah. Yes. We didn't like it.
No, we did not. Because it's absolutely shit.
Right. Sorry, Driss.
That's escalated quickly.
Yeah, it did.
It's interesting because Gary, just as mentioned quickly, calling something shit is very powerful because that's what Gary Lineker did about the England performance on his podcast, and he got in so much trouble about it. It's really interesting that he said England was shit.
Is it because it's BBC? Was it a BBC podcast?
No. His podcast is independent. It's his own production company. But it really hit home because it was like, oh my God, we've never heard him being that critical. Yeah, it is a powerful
it was,
word.
But I mean, coming from you, like us, it's not, is it? Because we say stuff.
Maybe with the Gary Lineker of TV-related podcasts.
We do always try and be kind in the feedback, constructive.
Yeah. Just come up with the answer to this question, you okay?
No, still no.
Okay, should we move on?
Yes, please.
Because we should talk about the Emmys.
Yes.
So if you want to have your question read out here or on Pilot Plus, then send them into K blah, 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 blah. Right.
Absolutely brilliant.
That is the best link ever. Brilliant. Yeah.
Right. Let's talk about this year's Emmys. Four, the Primetime Emmy Awards were announced for this year. How do we want to do it, Boydie? Are we going to go category by category? Or are we just going to talk about the fact that The Bear was once again shortlisted for Best Comedy Series, despite not being a fucking comedy?
Oh, my God. Well, I think we should say, first of all, the big overall winners.
So, yes.
As you say, the most nominated show is Shogun, which is
well deserved.
A major triumph.
25 nominations.
Yeah, 25. Then closely followed with 23, as you say, by The Bear, which is the most ever for an in quotes comedy series. Don't blame the messenger. Netflix was the most nominated service, channel, whatever you want to call it. FX did brilliantly.
Yes, they did, because Shogun and The Bear are both FX shows.
And then HBO. It was a bit of a slightly more quieter year for HBO, etc. Now I can go category.
We should also say Only Murders in the Building was like third highest with 21 nominations.
Your favourite.
True Detective Night Country got 19, and The Crown got 18.
Yeah.
So those were the top five winners.
Yeah.
But yes, so best drama series, The Crown.
Yes.
Fallout.
Yes.
What?
I know.
The Gilded Age.
I know.
The Morning Show. Nice to see that getting some love.
Yeah.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yeah.
Shogun.
Like
Slow Horses, which we have seen. And Three Body Problem. Thoughts?
I think Shogun's going to win easily, actually. Pretty much, I would say. I don't think. I think certain ones like The Gilded... I know you're a fan of The Gilded Age, aren't you?
No, but I shouldn't. Yeah. It doesn't stand shoulder to shoulder with these. But I do enjoy it.
I would say the only contenders are Shogun, maybe Slow Horses, maybe The Morning Show, The Crown, I don't know.
Bear in mind, this is Slow Horses, obviously season three, not season four.
Yeah. But I think Shogun is far and away the favourite.
Yeah, it definitely seems that the front... Fallout, that kind of blows my mind. I thought Fallout was fine, but I'm quite surprised to see it get this much traction. It's the retro future one with the ghouls based on the video game.
Is that the curtain thing?
Yes, it was
the curtain.
Yeah, it was the curtain. Yeah.
Yes, Kay,
yeah.
Right. That's the one.
That's been nominated for best individual sequence.
Good, best use of soft furnishing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God, that's just upsetting. Yeah. Right, best comedy. Fucking hell, best comedy series. Abbott Elementary, fair, is a comedy. The Bear, no, not a comedy. Curb Your Enthusiasm. Kind of a comedy. Hacks.
Shut the fuck up.
Only Murders in the Building, definitely
Hacks
not a comedy.
Still yet to arrive. This is season three, they still haven't got.
It's very true. Palm Royale.
Mystifying.
No, that's
first of all, four, five, six. Do they have to have eight? If they have to have eight nominations, is that how Palm Royale goes?
It is a lot. But it's an interesting one because both in drama and comedy, there's not a lot of kind of like repeat shows. There's not a lot of like, oh, it's The Usual Suspects, because it's actually quite an interesting mix of shows. Yeah. What We Do in the Shadows and Reservation Dogs.
I liked Reservation Dogs.
Comedy. Yeah, it's good.
It's good.
Very good. I would say Palm Royale is the weird outlier there. Oh. Who do we think is the best comedy? I mean, it's going to be The Bear, isn't it?
It's going to be The Bear.
Yeah, it will be The Bear. Which
could be Hacks. Could be Hacks. Critics quite like.
I like Abbott.
Yeah. Well. But I feel like
too many series.
I think Hacks will probably be seen as the more worthy choice. But bear in mind, The Bear here, it is season two of The Bear, not season three of The Bear. Yeah. So they're very clever about this.
Okay,
so when The Bear won last year, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so they quite cleverly did it. So when the voting period for season one of The Bear was on, season two was airing. So now this is the voting period for season two, and season three is airing. So it keeps The Bear very sort of front of mind.
It was all, but the whole calendar was put out by the writers' strike. So the Emmys were on in January. So there could be two Emmys this year.
That is actually true, isn't it? Yeah, because it's massively delayed.
Yeah, it's massively delayed. So this time it's on. It's normal. We will be on in September.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's why it feels like a lot of these shows, it's confusing as to which season it is. Blah 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 blah.
Hmm.
What's also confusing is in the best limited series, although technically limited or anthology. You have a number of returning series, but they are, as we said, anthologies. We've got Baby Reindeer, Fargo, Lessons in Chemistry, Ripley, and True Detective Night Country.
I'm not sure Lessons in Chemistry belongs there.
No, it doesn't. Yeah.
It's definitely the outlier, I would say.
The others are brilliant.
Room.
The others, I mean, Baby Reindeer, by the way, has got loads, and got, I think, 18 nominations and all, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it did very well.
Considering the controversy, etc.
Mm.
That, you know, absolute triumph for them. Fargo, one of the best seasons of that show. Ripley, Ripley is one of my, might even be my favourite show of the year.
What?
Yeah, Ripley is phenomenal. I said, I know, if you listen to it.
I really co-sign
your what, by the way.
I knew you loved it. Yeah. I didn't realise best show of the year is quite a big statement.
I mean, they couldn't even afford colour.
I know, but they made very good use of the black and white film stock they used. Absolutely brilliant show. But, and my other contender is True Detective Night Country. That is also a contender for my top.
Return to form for True Detective. And not just because you got to hang out with Jodie Foster.
No, exactly.
Lead actor in a drama series, Idris Elba Turn Up Charlie. Yeah. Sorry, no, for Hijack. Donald Glover, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Walton Goggins for Fallout, Gary Oldman, Slow Horses, Hiroyuki Sanada for Shogun, and Dominic West for The Crown. Ooh, that's a hard one.
Well, the interesting thing about that list for me is how much there's a lot of fun performances. Like Idris Elba in Hijack is just like a fun, isn't he? You know, like kind of very charismatic figure. Donald Glover, similarly in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. These aren't Walton Goggins even. These aren't like kind of, you know, big torturous
Gary
emotional.
Gary Oldman, very charismatic.
Hiroyuki Sanada's role is quite tortured. But
he stands out, and maybe he might be the favourite for that.
But then Oldman is incredible in Slow Horses.
Oh, no, I love them all. Gary Oldman's absolutely. I think this is the first time he's been nominated, by the way.
Is it?
Which is mad.
So in the Emmys, he's nominated for BAFTA. I was in the jury for nominating him for a BAFTA, by the way, last year.
You're taking full credit.
But that is a tough. Loads of legends in that lineup. Yeah, to be said.
Lead actress in the drama series, Jennifer Aniston for The Morning Show, Carrie Coon, The Gilded Age, Maya Erskine, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Anna Sawai, Shogun, Imelda Staunton, The Crown, and Reese Witherspoon also for The Morning Show.
I mean, it has to be Anna, doesn't it?
I would have thought so.
Dead sir.
She's just absolutely outstanding. She's the most outstanding thing in Shogun, I think. Mm-hmm. So.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think Imelda Staunton might put up a fight, but yeah. That's all I'm saying. The Americans love a bit of Queen.
They love the Queen.
Lead
actor in a comedy series. Matt Berry, What We Do in the Shadows. Larry David, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Steve Martin and Martin Short for Only Murders in the Building. Jeremy Allen White for The Bear, not a comedy. DeFerro Woon Atai for Reservation Dogs.
Can I just say, absolutely delighted to see Matt Berry in this, because he is one of my favourite people.
Yes, I can hear you.
Clem Fandango.
Yes.
Listen, I know we're saying it's not a comedy, but I love me some Jeremy Allen White.
Yeah, oh, he's going to win. Yeah. And well, he should, even though it's not a comedy.
Mm. Lovely to see Larry David recognised as well for the last season of Curb. And our favourite Stephen Martin in I Knew Him Was in the Building. Soon, returning soon, of course, we'll be doing our traditional spoiler special.
For crimes against comedy, Steve Martin.
I've gone a little off it, I told you.
Yeah.
It did, it did. When they disbanded them, they shouldn't do that. But anyway.
They're back together now.
Lead actress in a comedy series, Quinta Brunson, Abbott Elementary, Io Edebiri for The Bear, Selena Gomez, Only Murders in the Building, Maya Rudolph, Loot, Jean Smart for Hacks, and Kristen Wiig, Palm Royale.
Quinta or Io for me?
Io. There's only one candidate there.
Are we going to do all the categories? Are we going to run out of steam? We'll do a few more. Sorry, we won't do the whole thing because you'll all die.
Yeah.
Lead actor in a limited or anthology series, Matt Bomer, Fellow Travellers, good choice. Lots of excellent toe-sucking there. John Hamm, Fargo, Tom Hollander, Feud.
Piercing there.
Right. Feud, Capote versus the Swans, Richard Gadd, Baby Reindeer, and Andrew Scott for Ripley.
Scott. He probably won't win. I imagine Richard Gadd will win that.
Seems likely, doesn't it? Matt Bomer was very, very good in Velo Travellers.
Oh, yeah, very good. Yeah.
Lead actress in a limited or anthology series, Jodie Foster, True Detective, Night Country, Brie Larson, Lessons in Chemistry, Juno Temple, Fargo, Sofia Vergara for Griselda, and Naomi Watts for Feud.
I mean, you could just stop. You've got to stop it.
Yeah, should stop to Jodie Foster.
Friend of the pod, Jodie.
Yeah. Do we want to... Well, let's... Are there any other bits you want to pick out, because we won't go through all of the
categories. It's really entertaining. I was very much entertained by the fact that Jerry Seinfeld's Unfrosted, which did not get very good reviews.
Because it was terrible.
Because people don't know what they're talking about. I loved it's in the television movie category. Alongside Scoop, which is we loved.
Yeah.
And others. But yeah, I think it's brilliant that it got there because I really enjoyed it. Any other categories you want to mention?
Sporting actor in a comedy series, I really want Richie from The Bear to win.
Yes. That's a very good shout.
Yvonne Moss, Backrack.
Yeah. Rachel Kondo and Justin Marks obviously got writing for a drama series for Shogun and very much deserve it. Also Will Smith for Slow Horses. And comedy writing. What have we got in comedy writing? Christopher Storer for The Bear, not comedy.
And also just say supporting actress. I mean, most of the nominees are from The Morning Show / The Crown, but I would just plump for Christine Baranski just because I love her. And I don't think she's probably... Has she won an Emmy before?
Oh, I bet she has.
For The Good Wife.
I'm sure she has.
Okay,
I mean, maybe not for The Good Wife, but for her incredible career. I'll be surprised she hasn't won.
Oh, fine. I'll retract that then.
Well, yeah, I'm not asking for full retraction, but...
No, because I thought she hadn't been acknowledged in the way she should. But if she has, then fine.
There is something to be said for an Emmys that follows the ending of shows that have dominated it for years. So in the kind of post-succession, Better Call Saul, which was over, however many nominees it got, 50, I can't even count the number of nominees it got, but it got no Emmys. But it did feel like it's the same shows were dominating. And at least now it feels like a fresh spread, which I quite like. So it's a more interesting Emmys year. But exciting.
Very exciting.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping.
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Okie dokie. Well, hopefully we haven't bored you to death by listing all of those. But we should move on to... Well, let's have an interview before we go into news proper. Let's have this week's guest. Now, House of the Dragon Season 2 is airing at the moment on Sky and Now. And it has been kicking off of late. And we were talking literally on last week's podcast about how much we like Freddie Fox. And the universe listened, or at least HBO did, because Freddie dropped by the podcast this week to talk all things dragon with Boydie.
Welcome, Freddie Fox, to the Pilot TV podcast. How's it going?
It's going very well. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, total pleasure. I met you about nearly a decade ago, don't know if you remember, on the set of Cucumber.
Yeah.
Russell T. Davis's Cucumber. Yeah.
Yes.
It was a night shoot.
That's right. You came to a very, very long night shoot.
Mm.
I remember it very, very well. And oh God, it was, they were glorious days, those. I had such an amazing time making that show.
Yeah, fantastic show. But we are here to talk about your performance in House of the Dragon. Now, you are a newbie to season two.
Yes.
What is it like joining such a huge, huge, I mean, there is no bigger show on the planet, really, is there, at the moment, House of the Dragon? What is it like joining that cast for a second season of a show like this?
Yeah, it's amazing. I think because I'd not watched Game of Thrones, I sort of had a sort of quite blithe innocence about going into a show like this, where I think if I'd been loaded with, you know, the sort of mythology of the previous, you know, incarnation of it, I might have sort of been a bit more nervous. But I was excited for sure, but I was sort of quite new and fresh to it. And so I sort of tried to take it in my stride. All that being said, you get onto those massive sets, you know, in Spain or in Anglesey or in the studios in Leavesden, and you do have your breath taken away by the sheer scale of the craftsmanship, I think.
Mm. Mm. And what did you make of your character? So if you didn't watch Game of Thrones, but there's a lot of, obviously, we've met Sir Otto Hightower in season one, your dad.
Yes.
Effectively.
Our show, though.
Right. I was going to say. So you watched season one. What did you think of joining that particular family of Sir Otto and your sister, Queen Alicent?
Well, I mean, that perhaps was the only intimidating thing, because I'm such a fan of Rhys Ifans' work generally anyway. But he has such poise and command as a performer. I mean, whilst also being able to be a complete goof in other roles, but not in this one. And I watched him quite carefully, thinking, is there a way that I can take some of his body language into my own and see if I could, you know, sort of trace the familial kind of thing between us through body language. That being said, it sort of then dawned on me really that we'd not spent very much time together as father and son. Mm. He's always been preoccupied with the work at court, you know, being the sort of Rasputin really character. And I've been brought up by my mother in a completely different place, while Alicent was brought into the bosom of the court. And so I sort of in the end sort of tossed that idea out and just went, you know, no, just play it on your instinct. But it was a real honor, put it that way. And then Liv Cook, I mean, is the most tremendous actress. And I've watched her developing over the years as a performer. And I think really just took great heart from the fact that I'd be working with her, and also from the fact that she's such a lovely person. So in the end, I think that's been a really exciting part of the process for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I've just seen your first scene together with her, and where you kind of, as brother and sister, seeing you together for the first time. It's a really interesting conversation, isn't it? Because you end up, I think we see another side to you already from what we've seen when you're being, you know, a warrior and a soldier and all of that. You talk about how, you know, important it is for people to be nice. I thought that was quite an interesting conversation.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's quite unexpected from him, which I like about his, there's a mercurial element to him, which is quite smart and rational, whilst also sometimes being loaded with preconceptions as well. And he really humanizes over the course of the series. I won't spoil what happens in the final episode, but it made me really endeared to him as a person, going, look, you know, he's someone who perhaps was raised with a bit of a silver spoon in his mouth, and was a little quick to judge initially. But as time goes on and the battle completely breaks him down, he becomes a very human, kind person. And I love that conversation he has with Alice. And in fact, it was a scene we ended up reshooting because they wanted to do different things with the background and so on and so forth. But it was a nice, I was glad to have another shot at it, actually, because I wanted just to give it a couple more extra beats in there that I think really show what their relationship was, which is one that's been very distant, but one that is quite loving, even if only in sort of theory rather than practice. And I very much feel that I did a lot of backstory on him, and I feel he was very much raised by his mother, who he lost very young, and he's sort of been an abandoned child. And so consequently, reaching out as well as he knows how to his sister in that scene, I thought was very, very touching.
Yeah, and there's a lovely bit at the end where you touch hands very briefly.
That was an addition from me and Liv, and we just thought that symbolizes everything you need to know. There's an affection, but it's just not practiced. It's sort of slightly skittish, but it's still there, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And until that scene, we mostly see you with Fabian Frankel, of course.
Yeah,
the two of you are a bit of a kind of double act. Well, I mean, I interviewed him a couple of weeks ago for the podcast, and he was great. He seems great fun.
He's amazing fun. He's amazing fun. I mean, they all are liver too. I mean, just amazing fun. But Fabs and I get to spend a lot of our time together. And I can't put it more frankly by saying I felt like I'd known him for 20 years after having met him for 24 hours. And that's really lucky because we do have to spend a lot of time together. And you do need to feel over time that these people who are really on opposite ends politically in the court do end up sort of skirting each other and then finding common ground. So it was lovely to feel like we kind of could do that quite easily because we had a good friendship straight away.
Yeah, oh, that's good. Yeah. And we've had episode 4, which I think has already gone down in history as one of the great, you know, episodes of, in the Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon saga. It's so spectacular with all the dragons fighting and the massive armies, and it's huge. So do you, when you're in the middle of that, filming in the middle of that, do you have a sense of just how big that episode was going to be, you know, when you read the script and when you were there on set, etc.?
You feel that from the script, certainly. I mean, script. I mean, I remember us all saying on set, you know, this moment we're shooting now will become a sort of water cooler conversation. It just will because of the nature of it. And reading it on the page, you thought, whoa, this is exciting. You don't get to be involved in scenes like this very much. But actually, when it comes to actually shooting it, you're kind of gasping in awe at nothing. Mm. You know, there's nothing there. There, you know, there are plenty of extras on horses, but nothing like the amount that, you know, it is made to feel like in visual effects afterwards. So it's sort of a weird oxymoron in a way. Yes, it feels huge and epic and exciting, and then sort of quite sort of strangely lacking in a way. And then, you know, you end up seeing it on screen and it blows your mind, you know. I mean, that I think the fact that the dragons were fighting each other for the first time in any Game of Thrones show, we knew it was going to catch people's attention. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you are standing there on, you know, wherever you're filming on occasion, looking into the sky at, yeah. How does that work? How do you, you know, are you used to that level of visual effects to deal with?
You sort of, I mean, sometimes the director will share some previs stuff that they've cooked up, you know, to give you an idea. And that's very helpful, I have to say. You know, I sat down with Alan, the director, and he just took me through it in his office. And you do go, you know, that's just cool, you know, because there's a little bit of music to it too. So you get a feel of it. But then on the day, you know, he's like, there's a huge dragon coming over that tree line there. And you're like, okay, but how huge is it? I mean, is it, you know, and is it distant? Is it making big noise? Is there fire right near me? Is it fire quite far away? So it is a little bit of, I don't know, I guess movie magic in the end. And, you know, you hope your gasping is not neither overacting nor underacting.
So it must be quite an experience to watch the finished episodes. Like, do you know, and I know I've read an interview with you before where you say you're very reluctant to watch yourself on screen. So do you have to go through that process of watching yourself just to see how it ends up in this magnificent epic? Yeah.
I did for this, absolutely. I haven't actually watched anything else. I will watch season 2 in anticipation of prepping season 3, but I'm not watching any of it as it comes out. I don't quite know why. I just sort of, it's sort of on principle, I suppose, and not wanting to get too caught up in it when I'm doing other work. But I couldn't resist watching that episode, and I texted Fabi afterwards and just said, wow, we were part of the whole thing there. That was really cool.
And we were both
kind of thrilled and honored to be a part of a scene like that.
I bet. Yeah. What did he say?
Yeah, he said, yeah. I mean, yeah, lots of emojis, as you can imagine.
lots of dragon emojis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you jealous that you don't get to ride a dragon? Would you like to ride a dragon?
Yes, I'm very jealous. I don't get to ride a dragon. In fact, the only time I've ever, I sort of hung around on set on a bit that was not my scene, is I went to watch them, Baylor, ride the, what they call it, the buck, which is the kind of, you know, the hydraulic system, which is them riding a dragon, you know, with wind rushing through her hair and all that stuff. And I just was like, I have to stand and watch this because this is as close as I'm going to get to being a dragon rider. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And without giving anything away, is there more huge spectacle to come? Like, is this, you know, Are there scenes, are there episodes, are there sequences that are going to kind of match that level of epicness coming up?
Yes.
In a word, yes.
Yes, yes.
even with the, like, the VFX is one thing, isn't it? But it feels like there are a lot of extras as well to the, you know, particularly in that fourth episode. I guess there's a lot of CGI, et cetera. But is it being acting in the middle of that? Does it feel as epic as you might think, even without, you know, even forgetting the VFX and the dragons and everything?
I mean, I've been very lucky that I've been on a number of big films where you witness stuff like this. People, you know, it's on a King Arthur movie where they built the entirety of ancient London, you know, pre-medieval London. I mean Roman London, Londinium. And with hundreds of extras and things like that. And so I've sort of witnessed it before. So whilst it didn't come as a surprise, I think you do. I mean, it's that moment really where you're walking from your easy up, where you've been sitting with your cup of tea, onto this set. And you do feel this kind of butterflies in your stomach of going, wow, all eyes are on the action that we're going to be doing. There are lots of people around. The thought and work and effort that has gone in from everyone, from the production designers, the costume designers, makeup, the horse trainers, the armorers. And you do get a moment of whoa, this is rare and lucky and amazing. And wow, if I'd told myself I was going to be doing this when I was at drama school, I'd have pinched myself and gone, nah, screw you, you're a liar. But actually, so you have that moment. And then suddenly you're like into the problem of making the scene happen. Mm-hmm. And then it all kind of melts away and you just, you know, just becomes like any scene, you know, in a way.
How's the armor? You've got a lot of armor to go with. Is it as heavy as it looks?
No, I mean, it is. I mean, look, it's a weight for sure, but it's not. Most of it isn't metal. It's just really, really amazingly treated. The detailing on it is just outrageous. I mean, it's so tiny specific. I mean, even if you look at the kind of high tower on my breastplate, there's tiny little green flames above it, and wow. Just beautiful detail. And stuff people won't really ever notice. But, you know, when you get to examine your costume, you put it on so many times in fittings, you'd sort of, you know, and they make it as comfortable for you as they can, but it's still a chunky piece. But I don't know, it's not all that heavy, but it makes you feel powerful for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I bet. What would you remember how long it took to film that, the episode 4 dragon fighting sequence? Was that how long?
God, I wasn't there every day, but I mean, it was a number of weeks, certainly, at least 2 weeks, maybe 3.
Amazing. And do you remember what your first scene in the series was? What was the first scene you shot?
The first scene I shot. Yes, I know exactly what the first scene I shot was. It was in episode 5. It was me on a horse in front of the dragon's head. It's the one that's just come out, I think.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Being pretty pissed off with Kristen Cole for, you know, putting me in harm's way and everyone, all my men in harm's way, and not telling me any inkling of the plan that was afoot, which went spectacularly wrong. So, you know, I have justified the cause of being really pissed off. And we filmed that in Spain and the most beautiful set in Cáceres. And I was the last day of shooting, but I was there for the whole week. So I got to enjoy basically a sort of week being in Spain, getting to know everybody and meet everybody and the showrunners and the writers. And that was a really wonderful way to begin, you know.
Yeah.
Welcome to my new kind of work family, actually.
Oh, I bet. That's a great scene as well, with a dragon head being paraded around. It's like,
yeah, it was fantastic. Really great. And Fabi did some really beautiful acting. It tried it so many different ways. Claire, the Kilner, the director, is a fabulous director. She was so great in it. And, you know, actually, you talk about scale. I mean, that was where I was most overawed by the scale of it, because we were going, well, you know, acting in a UNESCO World Heritage Site. There's these trains were pouring from the bell towers above us, and which were obviously not planned, but there were no faces peering in through from windows. They, you know, HBO had managed to completely block off the whole of this massive square. I was like, God damn, this is a production.
Yeah, that's HBO. Yeah, HBO power. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And you have done in your career, I would say a surprisingly, a large number of period roles when you're in elaborate period costumes. Do you know why that you cast in this? What is your appeal for the period?
I mean, I guess maybe period people think, period often means that you know, have an accent that is probably naturally more like mine, which of course is a bizarre misnomer, but I guess you get cast that a little bit. Maybe the way my face looks, I don't know. It's obviously a you have to be mindful of not doing it all too much. But, you know, fortunately, shows like Slow Horses come along, Cucumber come along and give you a chance to do other stuff.
Yeah, it's a relief to be in modern dress and a sharp suit in Slow Horses.
Yeah, I mean, I do love getting dressed up in period stuff. And it's always, you know, the more extreme your costume, the further away it takes you from the humdrum of your everyday life and your dog chewing plastic cartons. But I think it you know, of course, yeah, it's there's an element of ease when it comes to going to the loo, for example. That's very helpful.
Yes, yes. I want to mention just Spider quickly in Slow Horses. What a phenomenally horrendous bastard of a character he was. He must have been huge fun to play.
He was amazing to play. And I'm so grateful to Will and the team for keeping me in it, you know, after I think probably I probably should have been dead by the end of season two. So to get the kind of, a reprieve to kind of do all that stuff with Jack and really take him to the cleaners in the scene where I, you know, he's in my office. I loved that. It was one of my favorite days of my life. You know, we just had such a giggle.
And is it fun? I mean, do you generally like, because you've played your fair share of, shall we say, difficult people.
Arseholes, I think you mean.
Yeah, that's the word. That's one word way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It must be a joy though to get sink your teeth into those kind of roles.
Yeah, they are. That you know, you always, of course, have to find the why, and you know, for any person and each one, however, whether it's a, you know, someone who's murdered people like, you know, Jeremy Bamber or Spider, you know, they're people, I suppose, you could crudely call baddies, but that you have to humanize all of them and give them reasons to be and reasons for their insecurities, but also reasons for believing what they believe in. And they're often more difficult and more complex brain chemistry, is more characters. So it gives you more to chew on, but it certainly gives you more to think about, actually, which I like. Although, you know, I wouldn't mind playing Prince Charming sometime soon. I think I need to balance it out a bit.
Yeah, fair enough. Having been in Cucumber, where I met you, do you follow Russell's stuff, Russell T. Davis's stuff since then? Have you followed his incredible career?
Completely. He's one of my great artistic heroes, Russell.
Yeah.
As well as being a lovely, lovely man and a friend, he's just someone I look up to because he is able to straddle, you know, really difficult socio-realist pieces that really has changed the culture. I mean, a lot of his work has changed our culture fundamentally, Queer as Folk obviously being an obvious example. But then to go off and do his Sprinkle Magic Dust on Doctor Who and, you know, give that such vitality and dimension and diversity, you know, but all with his very particular and familiar flavour, I think is... Yeah, I wouldn't use the term lightly, but I think he's a bit of a genius, to be honest.
Yeah, completely. I totally agree. Yeah. And one thing, the other show I wanted to mention, I'm a huge Matt Berry fan. So seeing you in the Year of the Rabbit was fantastic. And you popped up in the LA Best Toast series as well. He's a maverick, isn't he, Matt Berry? What's it like working with him?
Oh, I love Matt. And he's one and of a kind. There aren't comedians that he's, you know, offbeat, you know, unusual. He has such an understanding of the work of the past and he has a real adoration of, I mean, I remember of shows like The Sweeney. I mean, The Year of the Rabbit used to be called Ye Sweeney before it was
Yes. Rabbit.
And so all that very niche knowledge that he has about TV and music is stuff that I've really, really learned from. And actually, you know, to playing that part Strauss, who was innately good to his bones, was a real joy actually for me. And yeah. What Susie would come in. We had a lot of fun. We just turned some fun.
Yeah. Is it fun to do a lighter show, just something kind of, you know, which is just, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I'd love to do another one of those, you know, and I don't know whether we get a chance, but anything that Matt asked me to do, I know I'll end up making a prat of myself in the and I'd do anything he asked me to do, yeah.
Absolutely. And I should mention, you're in Guy Ritchie's most recent film, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, as Ian Fleming, which is out.
Yes. I mean, blinking, you missed me, but I think...
Oh, okay.
But again, not a film I've seen, but I had a lot of time. I have a lot of time for Guy. I think he's certainly from a point of view as a stylist, as a director, I don't think there's anybody alive in our country who has some, who can say someone's name and you go, yep, I completely understand what they do, how they do it, what it looks like, what it sounds like. Some of the, my favorite films of all time have been his films. I always am thrilled to work with him because it's always an exciting experience, always unpredictable, always engaging. And he's a sort of film hero of mine in a way too. I must watch it though, because I think I did a lot of improvisation. I don't know whether any of it got in or not.
Oh.
But I'd like to have a look and see.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's out in a couple of weeks. We'll be checking it out for sure. Yeah. And going back to Year of the Dragon, finally, do you have a handle on the complex, all the different characters, all the different, you know, the family trees, all the different political machinations? Do you have to have a handle on that when you're in the show? Or do you kind of just leave all that to kind of float over your head?
Well, you know, I think you can do one or the other. I read the Fire and Blood, the book that it was based on, which I was really surprised by because it's a sort of history book. I mean, it's an invented fantasy history, of course, but it reads like a kind of something I, you know, would have looked at A level. Do you know what I mean? It's like that. And yet really rich and compelling. And so I found that very helpful, particularly to understand the sort of role that Aegon the Conqueror played in everybody's lives, everybody looking back to these great big sort of epoch defining moments of their past, like the doom and you know the great dragon, you know, oh god, his name's going to escape me now, but who, you know, torched whole cities to ash, you know. And you get these, I'd suddenly then you're walking through these sets and you see these dragon skulls, and it connects with a kind of mythology that you now understand. So I find that very helpful. And I always read the scripts, you know, 3, 4, 5 times to make sure that I completely understand, because that's the last thing you want is to be on set going, oh Christ, how do they do that? Yeah. Because there can be a lot of that. But no, I think it helps. It really helps provide a sort of ease in the way you work on show.
Yeah. Oh, it totally pays off, obviously. Freddie, that's been brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us. That's great.
Cheers. No, my pleasure. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this.
That was Freddie Fox. Time now for this week's news. And what do we have in the way of non-Emmy related news?
So Stranger Things season 5 is halfway through filming, and news has been...
I'm laughing at you. I'm laughing at the announcement that they're halfway through filming. Yeah. It's mad, isn't it? Carry on.
And the Duffer brothers are already at work producing a new horror show for Netflix. Boy, that's what I was going to say.
Yes.
Something Very Bad Is Going to Happen is the title of it, and it's apparently an atmospheric horror series set at a wedding following a bride and groom in the week leading up to their ill-fated nuptials. And the press release says, that's not a spoiler, just read the title. So that's exciting for a lot of people.
It was funny though, they did do a we are halfway through filming like video message or something for the Stranger Things. It just reminds you how long it is taking to do these shows. I mean,
why? Yeah,
why? Because they're only halfway through, and it's like
why are they taking? Is it just because they're like,
well, Stranger Things? I mean, in general, there's a whole. It's true to say that the gap between series now, drama series particularly, is massive, just because they're all so ambitious. Stranger Things being among the most ambitious of all. Every episode of the last season was like feature length, pretty much. A huge number of visual effects, complicated characters to get to grips with. You know, it invariably takes years and years to do these shows. So, but I thought it was quite bold of Netflix to remind us just of how long we have to wait for this show by reminding us that only halfway through.
They're teasing us.
Yeah. Put it that way.
Or those who watch it.
Yeah.
For fans of Ramesh Ranganathan, of which Boyd and I are too, he's going to host a brand new celebrity game show. Now, I know this is off, like, you know, I know James give me the stink eye.
You're on thin ice.
I know, stink eye, but I ignore that. Just to say that he's going to be hosting something called Ramesh Ranganathan's Parents Evening, which will see a group of famous faces team up with their family members to find out how well parents know their children.
Here's some news that is right up Kay's alley.
Excuse me, leave my alley alone.
Noah Hawley's Alien series has not only wrapped production, but it has a title, and it is Alien: Earth. It's the first alien story set on Earth. It's Alien Earth.
No offense, that's not even trying.
No, it's not, is it?
It's not Alien: Earth.
Yes, the Alien: Earth.
Those aliens look quite colony anyway.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. No, it's just alien Earth, and it's set on Earth, so it's quite a bit on the nose, but, you know, but it's wrapped. Unlike Stranger Things, I've actually finished this one, so that's good.
Yeah, that's good news, yeah. Emily in Paris news. Mm. I know you love it, James.
Tell me.
It's one of your. Kay does genuinely like it. Well, first of all, it's back on season four, part one. It's back soon, August 15th, followed by part two. They're doing the old, you know, two-parter trick. But they've confirmed new cast members. The most exciting one of which, in fact, the only one I've actually heard of, apologies, is Rupert Everett. Rupert Everett is joining the cast. He plays the owner of a global interior design firm based in Rome called Giorgio, who makes it his business to know everyone else's business and to be the life of every party. Rupert Everett can do no wrong for me. So
the main reason why I continue to watch now is just because of the character called Sylvie. I don't know if you have you seen her, the first
Remind
series
me? Yeah,
she's the older French lady. Chic and cool as fuck. That's the only reason why I watch, but not but there are other reasons, but she's the main reason.
List the other reasons.
Someone is skating on very thin ice.
He's playing with fire today.
Yeah, he really is.
Blue Bloods is returning, by which I mean a new series called Blue Bloods, which has nothing to do with the Tom Selleck series that is Chris Hewitt's favourite show, but rather it's a teen vampire TV show spun off some YA books, and it's called Blue Bloods, and presumably about posh vampires.
It's weird that they're
couldn't think of a different title. Yeah, yeah, I mean,
basically. Yeah,
there are no new ideas.
Do we reveal on air that your long-awaited Interview with the Vampire season two is arriving on BBC Two on the 1st?
We haven't, have we? No, this is very exciting.
Yeah.
Are we reviewing that next week?
Well, it's a possibility.
Yeah,
it's a contender.
I'm very excited. Yeah. Finally getting to see season two of Interview with the Vampire.
Mm.
Yeah. I like Jacob Anderson, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah, but Kay excited about a supernatural show. Mm. Who'd have thought?
Very gory one as well. Let me warn you now.
Oh, really?
Very gory, but also very horny. So,
oh God, yeah, lots of shagging and blood sucking.
Ooh.
And tearing apart of bodies.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's pretty full on. Yeah, they're actually repeating now on BBC Two season one in time for season two to start next
week.
Nice. Yeah.
Well, season one was fantastic. So.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. What was the disappointing spin off was disappointing, wasn't it?
The Mayfair Witches.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that was
not, not quite as good.
No.
And then we got another spin off. We've got the Talamasca coming as well.
Yeah, but nowhere near as good.
No, it's not even close.
Right.
I didn't finish it.
Yeah.
I did mean to, I just haven't.
Yeah.
We all mean to do a lot of things, James.
That's true.
Profound.
Yeah. Boyd is on fire today.
Sorry.
And he looked nervous, and he's right.
He did look nervous. Could I just say, like, we got a press release this week that Citadel Diana.
Oh, yeah.
I think it had a trailer, and it sets its a premiere date. And now this is the first Citadel spin-off, which everyone is crying out for. This is the Italian Citadel spin-off. You remember this Citadel, which is the most expensive TV show ever made that Prime Video did. It wasn't very good, but they had this whole thing that there were going to be all these satellite shows set in all these different countries. And we're like, honestly, one was too much. But you know, hey, look, it's a thing, and they're pressing ahead with it. So Citadel Diana is coming to Italy.
I'm going to watch it. I'll give it a go.
You're not.
I will.
You're lying.
No,
really?
Is Priyanka Chopra in it?
Well, she was in the... Yeah. I don't know if she'd be in this one.
Did she die in season one? I don't know.
I don't recall her dying, but I don't think she's going to be necessarily in this spin-off.
Yeah, I think it's a different cast.
Yeah.
All right, well, then I don't know if I can commit.
But you are our foreign language correspondent,
yeah,
so I think
you are obligated.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I fill that remit by watching all the Australian dramas, but anyway,
yes,
it's fine.
Yes, because that is a foreign language, yes.
Well, you know. We've been stumped by the stupidity there.
Are you as big a fan, James, of popular music star Billie Eilish as you are?
No.
Do you not care about
her?
She's no Taylor. No.
I mean, I have listened to her music.
I only mentioned it because she's the latest of a superstar who's doing a CBeebies bedtime story. You know, they get these, it's TV news. They get these massive stars, yeah, to do Hugh Jackman.
I have never been
Tom
asked
Hardy's done it.
To do
Tom
a CBeebies bedtime story.
Well, it's because you're not a massive star. I mean, you're a massive lots of things.
He's a massive Bella.
Yeah.
Is that not enough? Does that not qualify me?
No. But yeah. Billie Eilish is doing one on the 19th of July.
Are you going to be tuning
tomorrow
in, Boyd?
No. But, you know, people might do. People love Billie Eilish. She's hugely popular, I believe, in the world of popular music.
You're a funny. Boydie,
yeah. Finger on the pulse, Hilton. Yeah. What else have we got? Poker Face Season 2 has added Giancarlo Esposito, Kumail Nanjiani, and Katie Holmes. So if you're interested in watching more of that, there'll be some good people in it.
I was not. I'm not interested in watching more of it.
Kay doesn't give a
you
fuck.
You two really liked it, and I...
It was really good. Yeah.
It was really good.
I didn't remember you... Did you hate it?
I didn't hate it. Yeah. I just wasn't into it.
God.
Wow.
Interesting. Well, that has an interesting impact on the show we're reviewing later, maybe.
Maybe it does. Maybe it does. Terminator Zero got a trailer. Kay, did you like that?
Loved it.
And of course, we mentioned earlier on that Presumed Innocent is getting a season 2 renewal over Apple TV Plus. I don't understand that news. I don't know what to do with that news. But yeah, it's a thing.
I don't know if you have to do anything with it.
Well, I just don't understand how it feels to me like it's a closed story unless they do something just vastly different with the final episode. So we'll find out. In fact, we may have found it. Will we have found out by the time this episode airs? Possibly not, but afterwards.
I was just checking actually when the finale does air because it's very important.
Obviously. It is important. I want to say it's like, it'll be after this podcast. I think it's Tuesday or Wednesday. I don't think it's the beginning of the week.
Yeah, I think it's Wednesday.
Yeah.
I think you're right, yeah. So we should do something special. We should convene, you know, I'm just throwing this out there
we'll
now.
We'll just convene a special podcast to discuss the ending of Presumed Innocent. Well, maybe we'll cover it on Pilot Plus.
Maybe it could cover it on Pilot Plus, Do you like 24? So that's the day I fly to New York, by the way.
When you demanded we do Pilot Plus a day early. So that would you be...
I didn't demand.
You demanded.
You did.
So you'll throw out our plans to cover the Presumed Innocent finale on Pilot Plus by going to New York.
But let's just think about this. We might get another hotel story out of it.
That is true. That is true.
And then we'll all be grateful.
And that'll be Pilot Plus cover for like the next 3 or 4 weeks. So that's good.
I'm taking the piss.
Talking on bedtime stories.
You're smug, aren't you?
I am. That was pretty good.
Well, maybe we can pipe you into the studio, Boydie, like we did with Kay.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, I'll certainly try. That's the kind of professional I am. I'm willing to try.
He's willing to try.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
We'll give it a go. Okay, is that it for news? Are we done with news?
Yep.
God, please.
Yeah. Please, God, can we be done with news? Okay, fine. Let's move on to this week's reviews. And we begin with Time Bandits on Apple TV Plus. And this is a show from Taika Waititi, Ian Morris, and Jermaine Clement. It takes its cues from the 1981 Terry Gilliam film. Obviously of the same name, and this transplants that film's kind of Python-esque anarchic energy to the small screen for this, and drafts in Lisa Kudrow as well. This one is about an 11-year-old history nerd, a time-hopping heist, and of course, hilarity aplenty from the similarity between the name Damon and the word demon. Hard to imagine why House of the Dragon didn't get on that particular bandwagon. Kate, now, given that your favourite show of all time is about time travel, who better to dissect its temporal treats than you?
Such a dick. Do you know what? You would think that I really hated this, but I didn't. I actually quite enjoyed it. I think Lisa Kudrow is really good in the role of Penelope, who is the... she says she's the leader of this time bandit gang, but actually no one agrees with her. But I think she's really funny and she really leans into the role. She's got a touch of the Valerie to Cherish about her. So anyone who was a fan of The Comeback, like I was, she lapses into that a bit. Which I really enjoy. And I just think as a group, the gang, they've got a great mix of like characters. Kevin Haddock, who's the young boy, who is like, as James said, this history-loving young geek. I think he's a good young actor. And I really just like their... Yeah, I thought it was fun and entertaining. I mean, my downside to it was I thought that some of the characters, like the parents, were quite one-dimensional, but I've only seen one episode. But other than that, I did enjoy it. And then actually there's one bit which I found particularly funny with the quiet screaming. I don't know why, that really tickled me. So yes, it's fun and entertaining. I don't think I'll watch any more because it does skew young, but...
Well, we should say it's a kids' show. And the reason I know this is because I couldn't find it on the screener site at all, and I panicked. And then I scrolled down to the kids' section, and that's where it was.
The same experience, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, because like I said, I've never seen Terry Gilliam's film.
Haven't you?
No, I'm not that big a fan of a lot of the Python stuff. So even that, and I mean, it's not official Python, but you know what I mean. Mm. And so I've never seen it. So I don't know quite how close it is to that. But I was... I mean, it skews very young. Like, it is very much a kid show.
But I think you could still... Like, kids would watch it with adults. Yeah. I think it's still, you know, enjoyable.
It skews very young implies almost like for, like, 7-year-olds or something. It's I think teenagers enough. I think it's the same.
Young, maybe tweenagers.
Right. Fight it out. But I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to as well. I think partly because I had a conversation with you, James, about it. And you were like quiet. You were like, you hadn't heard great things.
Well, Empire gave it 2 stars. Right, I should say that.
Okay. I was holding back. I was holding back at being explicitly referring to that.
Yeah.
I think it's easily a 3-star show. I think 2 stars is very harsh. First of all, I have seen the original Time Bandits.
I mean, it's a Heat 4, obviously.
It's a Heat 4 for sure. Don't you take the piss. I don't think Time Bandits is one of the career high points anyway of the Pythons at all. I don't think it is a particularly great film in any way. It also looks quite cheap and kind of thrown together these days if you watch it. This is a very slickly put together classic Apple TV Plus. Feels like it's had a lot of money lavished on it. And that core creative team is pretty impressive. And it's got that kind of Taika Waititi tone to it, which is quite specific, which I think in intrinsically makes it adult friendly, because there's loads of stuff in it. There's loads of kind of the parents that you mentioned, Kate, being one dimensional, and they are, of course, totally one dimensional, but they're funny as well.
Yeah, they are funny.
And they are deliberately one dimensional.
Yeah, if they had any more dimensions, they'd be less funny. So,
yeah, that is true.
They're almost like a bit of a high point for me because they don't give a flying shit about their son, which I think is really funny.
Well, they do. They just want him to be young and embrace,
but they're kind of anti his nerdery. I quite like the fact that he is like a nerd hero. They want him to stop being a nerd, as does his sister, and he's absolutely ploughing forward full on with his nerdery. And I like the idea. I think the idea of him being a history expert and knowing all the facts and teaching all of these people, the characters who are the Time Bandits, about what they can expect to happen, like in Troy and at Stonehenge. I think it's a cute kind of idea. So I genuinely, and he is brilliant, by the way. Kal-El Tuck, who plays Kevin, he is fantastic. He's as good in this role as the young Alan Carr is in the Alan Carr thing that I keep going on about all the time on ITV, you know, The Changing Ends. They reminded me a little bit of each other because they're both quite kind of geeky and they embrace and celebrate the nerd, which I think is great. So, and Lisa Kudrow, as you say, I mean, it's not exactly a stretch, is it? She's doing the Lisa Kudrow thing.
Yeah, she is.
You know, in a mixture of Valerie
Cherish. But it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
And she does it well.
Huge fun. But I enjoyed it a lot more than I expected.
Me too.
I think it'll go down really well. I mean, with its target audience,
with the kids.
But you need family friend. I would say family friendly rather than kids.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing you could be sitting with your offspring and they're watching it and you're on your phone. I think the comedy here is applied with a cricket bat rather than a scalpel at times. It's not subtle, but I don't think it's trying to be. I think it does what it sets out to do. I can't comment on how well it captures the tone of the original.
It's better than the original. It's better than the film. I'm telling you now.
Okay.
For nothing. Yeah.
Dan Jolin will come for you over that.
Well,
but, you know.
Fine. Me and Dan Jolin.
But yeah, I will not be watching anymore. I didn't hate it. And certainly I liked it more than I thought I would. But I don't always love things that skew quite young. But
you just hate the young.
When I saw Kevin, I thought, a young James Dyer.
Oh, fuck.
No, but don't you think?
I
thought it was a compliment.
He's great.
I mean,
he's
I wasn't going along the cute lines.
It didn't feel like a compliment. I'm not going to lie.
No, someone who oh, please, tell me you didn't like facts when you were younger.
I mean, you literally told us
anecdotes about when you used to do,
Yeah, I do like a fact.
I, you know what, I'm just remembering the funniest scene is in the football picking scene where he's next to the guy who's got a broken leg.
Yeah, and he gets put last.
He's put in a cast and they still pick him.
Yeah. I felt quite triggered by that.
It celebrates that. I think nerds will, quite rightly appreciate
and the banter he has with the Time Bandits is quite fun.
It's fun.
So, yeah. No, I didn't.
He comes into his own then, right? Because everyone needs him because they think he's a soothsayer.
But he's just a nerd.
He's just smart.
Yeah.
But if we're talking sub-Python things, I think it's much better than that. I keep banging on about the swashbuckling Python-esque thing that we reviewed. It was on Apple TV Plus. I keep forgetting the name of it.
You mean the Dick Turpin one?
Dick Turpin.
Yes.
Dick Turpin, which is, I'm sorry I keep banging on about that. That's my current, measure things by how not funny Dick Turpin was. This is much better than Dick Turpin.
Turpin a kick in the dick. Anyway.
Very good.
That was Time Bandits. That's on Apple TV Plus. When, Boydie?
Wednesday, the 24th of July, 2024.
Fabulous. Next up, we have Elspeth on Sky Witness. And this one latches onto... So this is Carrie Preston's character from The Good Wife and also The Good Fight, Elspeth Tassioni. And instead of being a legal drama, this is actually, I guess it's kind of like a police procedural, isn't it? And this one has her helping the NYPD solve cases while also kind of investigating, shall we say, other things as well. Boydie, you're a fan of The Good Wife. Mm. You're a fan of The Good Fight.
Mm.
Are you a fan of Elspeth?
A little bit disappointing.
What?
Yeah, if I'm honest, it's a Hal Ketchum is the current,
yes.
It's not a whodunit.
Yes.
But in the vein of Poker Face, hence why I referred to it earlier, because it's very
but
much
but not
in there,
as good.
But not as good, I'm afraid. Exactly. And I think if it hadn't been for Poker Face being a pretty much excellent revival of this genre, which of course goes way back to Columbo, as everyone knows, as we discussed when we reviewed Poker Face, that's so well done and so ambitious within the format, the very rigid format of we see the crime being committed before our very eyes, in comes the detective, the female detective in both cases, to try and solve it before our very eyes. And the fun is in watching them put two and two together and put the clues together and be clever about it. I like the character. She's funny, you know, and she was funny in the shows that this is spun off from, and you just about buy that the police want her to help them just about with some of these crimes.
Just about.
And that she can poke her nose in to the level she does. But that's part of the fun of it, is making that just about plausible, even though it's completely ridiculous, obviously. And this first mystery, I thought was a bit one-dimensional, to use that, we keep using one-dimensional today, but I thought it was a bit simplistic, the mystery, that there weren't very many twists to it. And if any,
yeah, I wonder whether it's because it's kind of a comedy drama, isn't it?
Like,
they definitely amp up the comedy. So The Good Wife and The Good Fight always walk that line between comedy and drama, and did it very, very well. But this, you're right, it's like the actual, because Stephen Moyer's in it, very, very good
in the first episode,
we see him committing the crime in the first one, but it's not clever enough or funny enough. So it needs to be either cleverer or funnier. And Poker Face, I have to say it, is both very funny and very clever.
Well, and, 100% agree, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just hope. So I think if it hadn't been for Poker Face, maybe this would have seemed better.
I think so.
It is trying to be funny a bit, and she is a funny character.
She is. But, and I will say this, Elspeth Tassioni is a great character, but she is a supporting character. And my concern with this, it's hard to say from the first episode, but my concern with this is she's a lot. And I just think, as a supporting character, she works brilliantly as part of the mix. As the central character, I wonder whether she might grate, because she has a very specific shtick, and I'm just not sure that carries show.
But I think most people watching it are going to be watching because they love that character, right?
Maybe.
She is a Marmite character.
Sure.
But
that's a lot of Marmite, though.
Yeah,
The secret to Marmite on Toast Cake is less is more.
Yeah, I'm like that.
Interesting.
I love this character, though, so I'm the one probably person who's going to be continuing to watch because I.
So you'll watch this, but you won't watch Poker Face. Unbelievable.
I didn't like Poker Face. Anyway, let's not get into that. But yeah, I just think she must be a joy to write for as well, because she's such an odd, quirky character.
Yeah.
And as you say, the Columbo reference in that manner, she's there constantly, right? At inopportune moments, like being a nightmare for the suspects. And people presume she's a fool, and actually she disarms them very quickly and she's acutely intelligent. I feel seen. No. I think she's really funny, and I like the campiness and the tone. I'm going to watch more of this. I really. And also, hello, they mentioned Carrie Argos.
They do.
Which is a great callback to Carrie in The Good Wife.
Either a great callback or an incredibly clumsy, obvious callback, depending on your point of view. But
here's a question for you, though, and this I'm going to raise this as a big topic. Don't have to discuss it in full now, but just to drop this, I found it slightly problematic that this first episode revolves around quite a horrible murder, right? You know, this abusive man with his young girl. This is not a spoiler, because this is... And yet they kind of make fun of it, and they make into a light, you know, cozy crime almost genre. And particularly at the end, right at the end, the kind of whole... where he's chatting to her. I thought, I found it a bit creepy and a bit inappropriate.
Yeah, so. The crime was...
It's an interesting choice for a first crime in this show.
If you're setting
format.
The tone, it was a... Yeah, I know what you mean.
I agree.
I have issues.
Yeah.
Just saying. There you go.
Elspeth then, which comes to Sky Witness.
Sky Witness now.
Now.
Tuesday, 9 p.m. on the Sky Witness, as you just said.
Finally this week, we have Piglets on ITV, which actually aired yesterday, but the Decameron is embargoed. What do you want from us? This is like Police Academy, because it kind of sees the doors of law enforcement thrown open to all and sundry, only this Police Academy is in Norbourne. So, Kay, ITV brought this little piggy to market, but did this one make you go wee, 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 wee all the way home?
Very good. I'm not sure about that. I enjoyed it. I've watched it twice, the first episode.
Steady.
because I went the first time I watched it, it didn't quite land. And this seems like the kind of show I would enjoy.
That's what Terry used to do. She'd watch a show, and if it didn't quite land with her, she'd just watch it again to make sure.
Well, no, because I thought to myself, this is the kind of show that I would usually like.
It really is. Hey, look, that was not an insult.
And I thought, oh, maybe I was a bit tired. Let me try it again. And I did enjoy it more the second viewing. It's from the creator of the Green Wing, and it's another workplace TV comedy based, as you say, in the police training college. Sarah Parrish plays No Nonsense Superintendent Julie Spry, and the very excellent Mark Heap, Jim from Friday Night Dinner, is another superintendent. And it's about the new recruits, and it's an eclectic bunch. And the premise, this first episode is about the fact that someone is there who really is there for the wrong reasons. And Julie Spry, aka Sarah Parrish, is going to find them. And I think the highlights for me are Parrish and Heap as the superintendents. They've got a really good connection and banter between them, dynamics, quite funny. But also one of the recruits, Paul, is a wrong'un. We see that instantly. It's not a spoiler. And I quite like, I've warmed to his character. I thought it was quite a funny character. I think overall, I didn't put it like this. It's not Black Ops for me, which is another comedy based at a kind of police, you know, following recruits or what were they? They were specials, weren't they? They were
special constables, yeah.
So I think I preferred that. And overall, I felt like these felt like comedy characters put, you know,
yes,
brought together.
Yeah, they're
and you don't necessarily believe them, but they're like, this is why this one's funny and this one, you know, like, do you know what I mean?
It's very overt. Yes.
I did like Rebecca Humphreys in the role of, I can't remember what her name is, but she plays like the head.
Melanie.
Yeah, she plays the head of admin and she was very good as well. So, yeah, I thought it was entertaining.
Yeah. It's my nemesis, isn't it? Silly comedy.
Yeah.
But I didn't hate it. Didn't hate it because there were a couple of moments it's actually quite funny.
Yeah.
Like, it is silly comedy.
Yeah.
But there's some quite funny moments in it. And there are some bits that I cringed and died at, but there were also some quite funny bits.
Yeah, this is out and out silly comedy. This is meant to be silly. Victoria Pyle, who's the creator of Green Wing and Campus. I don't know if you ever saw Campus, was a Channel 4 campus set comedy in the same way. She specializes in what you call them precinct or workplace comedies. And she has teams of writers come out with gags. It's just gag after gag after gag.
Yeah.
It is in that airplane, anything goes style. There's visual gags, people falling over, people doing ridiculous things. And it's all at the service of being funny. And I find it so refreshing in an era where we get, you know, every other comedy. And I like a lot of them, but every other comedy is about someone who's experienced trauma or has had mental health issues. You know what I mean? Like, there's loads of those. There's remarkably few of these that just want to be funny.
Out and out comedy.
Out and out silly. And it is silly, but I love it. I've watched like three of these, I will devour the rest, the whole six episodes. And I really, huge kudos to ITV, I have to say, because there was a time, I mentioned this on Plus, I'm mentioning again, my ITV acclamation. There was a time where they wouldn't go anywhere near any comedy for years, I would say, almost like a decade until very recently. And I think the creation of ITVX as their streaming service is allowing them to do other stuff like this and like the Anne and Carl show. And this is great. Saturday night, 9:30, hugely entertaining show, really funny. I love it.
Piglets then?
Yeah.
On ITV Now.
Saturdays, you said before, so I meant to correct you.
It was not on Sunday.
No, it wasn't Sunday.
It was on Saturday.
Yeah.
So it was 2 days ago. So we're an extra day out of date.
Yeah, we've done shows out of date before, you utter twat. And we could have done the Decameron, but it's embargoed.
It's embargoed. It's embargoed. And we will be doing that on Pilot Plus, so that's good.
Yes.
What else have we missed this week, Boydie?
There's this thing called Tokyo Swindlers.
Yes.
On Thursday on the Netflix. Which is
a Japanese language.
Japanese language crime thriller, which looks really interesting. Yeah. About real estate scams, but they had no interest in sending us screeners for that. One of my favourites, Elite, which is the demented Spanish teen drama, full-on sex and drugs stuff, is that the final season arrives on Netflix on Friday. Equally, no sign of any screeners. The eighth season of it. It is an extraordinary show. I think that there isn't that much,
no,
to be honest.
I think that's
all the sport
it.
Is kicking in. It's going to be quite an interesting time. They're showing Love and Death, repeating that on ITV1 on Saturdays. That was the thing about with Elizabeth Olsen, the true crime.
Oh,
song.
Yeah.
Bath sub murder.
But I think that's about it.
Okay, so what's our pick of the week?
I'm going to go for Time Bandits.
Piglets for me.
Because it felt different.
Which, by the way, do you know Piglets? This is what I meant to say. Do you know that police have complained about the title?
Yeah, I mean,
come on, get a sense of humour. It's fine.
They complained about the title?
Yeah.
They wanted
ITV to change it. They wanted ITV to change the title. They asked them to change it. Insane. Yeah.
That's quite a funny title.
Oh, I agree, yeah. What are you going to choose? It's a tough one for you, isn't it? You didn't like anything.
I didn't like anything this week. I mean, God, maybe Piglets. Honestly?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Another one for Piglets. Okay, well, that is it. That is the show. We're done. Please do review us and give us a 5 little piggy rating. That would be very much appreciated. We had a few more reviews this week. We want more.
6 new reviews.
Six down, another 100 or something to go.
6 heroes.
They're going to be discussed extensively on Pilot Plus.
Well, you name them. Name them all.
I'm going to pay tribute to each and every, not all superheroes wear capes.
That's right. Yeah. Kay's going to name and fame you.
Yeah, exactly.
Invite them around for coffee in your lavish mansion in Sussex.
Yeah, that's right.
Sussex,
maybe make them some cake.
You know, it can't be
some
more specific.
Pat Val cake.
Yeah.
Okay, super. And please do follow us on the socials at Pilot TV Pod, as well as at Kay Ribeiro, at Boyd Hilton, and at James C. Dyer. On next week's show, hopefully we'll be able to do Interview with the Vampire Season 2. Hooray! Which is very exciting, but more exciting than that, 4K. Of course, The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon finally makes its appearance on Sky Max, even though it's coming after The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, which is technically supposed to be after this one, and that's annoying, but doesn't matter. It is coming. That is good. There's a Batman animated series, which we're not going to go anywhere near. There's Fantasmus on Sky Comedy. What else have we got? Women in Blue on Apple TV+. What's that, Boydie?
It's can you previewed that this week.
Yes, it's about
Spanish
set
language.
Set in Mexico.
Yeah.
I think I can't remember which era, but basically it's about some women who joined the police force, this initiative to get, you know, women in the blah, blah, blah. It's all a lie.
So it's like Spanish Piglets.
It's not a comedy.
It's not a comedy.
No.
And Totally Completely Fine, which is the Thomas and Mackenzie series I was telling you about.
Yes,
indeed. On ITVX.
We'll have some kind of smattering combination of those, which would be very, very exciting. We will be in your ears on Thursday on Pilot Plus when we will be reviewing The Decameron on Netflix. We will also be talking about episode 6 of House of the Dragon. And depending on timings, we will hopefully have a little bit of a chat about the finale of Presumed Innocent. But we'll see what we can do about that. Boydie will, of course, be coming to you live from New York, like David Letterman.
Yeah, exactly.
And Kay and I will just be coming to you from this studio. Exciting. Pilot out.